Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Friday, the 19th of October. Very nice to have you with us on this Friday morning, and we welcome you. We also welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. A quick note that the music we just heard was Ezekiel's Wheels Klezmer Band, and they're going to be playing the Jupiter Lounge at Crossgates Mall on Sunday, the 21st, the concert is sponsored by the Nassau Synagogue and Jewish Community Center to support preservation of its historic building. And you can find out more by going to nassausynagogue.org for more information. We're going to be hearing their music throughout the morning this morning during the panel. And you can certainly go to our website, wamc.org/roundtable, to see the full playlist. But again, Ezekiel's Wheels Klezmer Band. All right, let me introduce our panel to you, and then we will get started. And we're still waiting for one more, but we'll get started in the introductions. Aaron Vicitti is here. He is a professor of economics at Siena College, and it's a pleasure to have you with us, sir. Nice to have you.
It's nice to be back. Thank you, Joe. We miss you.
Yeah, thank you. Also, Alan Chartok is with us. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Good morning. You don't want to know. Ezekiel saw the wheel way up in the middle of the air. Ezekiel saw the wheel way up in the middle of the air.
That's big one.
Yeah, well, I remember the song quite well.
That's very good.
Yeah.
So we're waiting for David Soares, the district attorney. Sometimes he is a he usually gets in just under the wire, but today the wire got him, I think. But
I feel so lonely. It's just Joe and I.
Yeah, I know. Well, so we'll find, hopefully we'll find David over the next couple of minutes.
We will.
Yeah. All right. So, but that doesn't stop us from starting and finding out what's going on in the world and talking about the news at large. And we begin with the story that has been in the news pretty much all week this week, and we spoke about it at length yesterday and will continue, because President Trump has finally somewhat given in on the Khashoggi story, in which he says that it appears that Jamal Khashoggi is dead, and warned that his administration could consider very severe measures against Saudi Arabia, sharply raising pressures on the kingdom as it prepares its own accounting of the journalist's disappearance. The remarks reflect the vacillating strategies and views in the White House over its response and possible punishments toward one of its key Middle East allies. So, Alan, I have to say, in just reading that sentence, that the administration could consider very severe and it appears
could.
I mean, very severe, possibly. You wonder how strong that language is.
Well, of course, it's vacillating language. You know it, and as you correctly pointed out, just by the way you asked the question, the truth is that we have a big problem here, and that is we've been dealing with people whose ideas are counterthetical, if there's a better word.
Antithetical?
That's the one. Antithetical to the to the announced principles of the United States. Now, we have a president who's going around, allegedly this morning, we hear it on the radio and the television, saying to a guy who beat up a reporter, good job, beat him up. But here's the thing. And correct me if I'm wrong, you guys, because I know you will. There is always the penchant for following the polls, right? We know these guys follow the polls. They poll all the time. They have a staff of pollsters. They go to the polls, the national polls, and the polls are saying, hey, we don't like this. The American people don't like this. They don't like it so much, and with midterms coming up, that this really might be something that will do you in. So the president, with all his largesse, says, well, it appears. What do you mean it appears, Donald? You know very well that the Turks have already announced that they have a tape of the guy being, you know, hurt and tortured and cut up. That's extraordinary stuff. And the American people don't like it. Even the people who are on that side of the ledger, that Republican side of the ledger, don't like it. Now, we've seen Lindsey Graham and we've seen some of his colleagues say, this is terrible, and if this is really true, we're going to go after him with everything we have. And now, that was a week ago, now they're getting more and more muted as they understand what the potential political reaction to this is going to be.
Yeah, I mean, the story that came out in the New York Times 2 days ago about the details of the dismemberment and the torture was really tough to read. And to the extent that it is true, a lot of the people that were waiting for this to happen have ties to the Saudi royal family. The doctor that was there was suggesting that when they dismembered him, they listened to music to ease some of the stress. I mean, all of this just points to an absolutely gruesome and grotesque political statement, I guess you could say. So with all of that information out, the fact that, you know, a day later, Trump, you know, finally, most likely begrudgingly admitted that, you know, this is bad, that should be taken with a grain of salt, because we all know how fond he is of strong-armed dictators and his dislike of the press, as Alan pointed out. So, you know, the fact that he said this, I think, carries almost no weight. And the, you know, very symbolic of Steve Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, who pulled out of the investor conference in Saudi Arabia, is probably the lowest bar you can set for the U.S. saying, we don't approve of this.
And the question then, of course, becomes, what do the Saudis do in reaction? Listen, they have this guy. They have him.
Yeah.
They've loaned him money. They've saved his behind. He's lied about that. First, he bragged during the campaign that he has a ton of money coming from them. Now he tells us he has no reaction to it. His lies have become the new normal, and that's really too bad. But the fact of the matter is that these people are antithetical to what we believe. Now, why are the polls going against them? I'm going to tell you why. Because there isn't a single individual alive who can't relate to the idea that you kill somebody, but you dismember him before you kill him. I mean, hey, that's got to hurt. And I think everybody, and that's not a joke, everybody's got to understand that could happen. That's something they can understand when we hear about it. Don't
you
think,
and you know, the other issue is, you know, Trump was talking about, you know, the search for locating the body. And again, to the extent that the New York Times article is true about the dismemberment, that's going to be probably pretty tough, because this seems like a very premeditated operation. I'm sure the Saudis knew there would be a search for the body, to provide some conclusive evidence. And to that extent, it seems like they covered their bases very well by doing, you know, performing acts of absolute brutality on this.
So the two head, I'm sorry, Alan. So the two,
no,
of the,
go ahead.
Two of the headlines that are coming out this morning is the Turkish foreign minister says that they will. Turkey will share the results of the Khashoggi probe
right.
with the world. They are also saying that it is also believed that they that Turkey knew within just hours of of his death that he was dead. So you know, that plays into it as well. I will go ahead, Alan.
And of course, it tells us that these embassies are so heavily bugged that the Turks could come up with this information.
Yeah. And the security tape of the somebody who's close to
the prince.
Yeah, the crown prince. I MBS is how I've been referring to him
right.
as. But, you know, his, you know, so the fact that he has been trying to modernize the Saudi economy and, you know, turn more to, you know, economics and, you know, economic development and looking for a slight shift to more democratic political norms. This is a big strike for him. If these are his stated goals, Now, this is probably just the tip of the iceberg of some of the things that are happening behind the scenes, and this really, it certainly will not reflect well on him if he's saying one thing in public and then all of this stuff comes out in private of, dismemberment, and Trump is just, still balking about saying that, maybe the Saudis are responsible, and he's just remaining mum on whether or not this goes all the way up to the highest levels of the Saudi government.
All rise. You don't have to, Alan. I know your back hurts, but the district attorney has arrived.
Yay!
I am very sorry. I had a flight last night in from New Orleans, and late start this morning. I apologize. I've been listening with bated breath. I just there's so many intelligent things that were being said. I just didn't think I could offer anything to this conversation.
The term I like for that is fashionably but unprofessionally late.
the term I liked was bated breath.
Yeah, there you go. Well, do you want to weigh in on anything on this topic or your thoughts?
This story isn't just a. It's not something that's going to go away. Unfortunately, I think we're going to continue to see instances where we have there is a war on truth right now, and it's not just here in the United States. It's all over the world. I think if we begin to reflect on what happened in Paris just a year ago, and in other press rooms where it's either ISIS related assault on members of the press who are doing their job, which is exposing the truth and exposing, the truth in the presence of power. We're seeing, press rooms being attacked here in the United States, and the idea that a foreign government can, with impunity, murder a member of the press and the Washington Post in this instance. And, you have the president of the United States offering what I would consider to be trial balloons in the press and taking a different posture, only when it's fourth and long and the public and the press has exposed every single element of a case like this, only then, offering what I would consider hollow threats, the same kind of hollow threats that were thrown in the direction of Vladimir Putin. This is troubling. This is extremely troubling, and I think this is an issue that's going to impact on the midterms as well.
Now, look, David, here's the question I need your thinking on, and we all need your thinking on, and that is the 35%, we don't really count, right? I mean, we don't really count. We don't like the guy. We don't like what he does. We think it's pre-fascist or whatever else he's doing. But that 35% to 40% remains solid. Now, out of that group, how many people turn around and say, when you torture, kill with impunity, this is okay? Where's the line on the 35%? That's what I want to know.
I don't think you have movement on the 35%. The 35%,
no matter what,
there's no appreciation for the Constitution. The 35%, they're the people that are screaming, fake news. These are the people that are accessories. They're the unindicted co-conspirators in this war on the press and war on truth.
And they'll follow their guy no matter what.
I'm going to disagree. I'm going to tell you that I think there comes a point. It happened in Watergate, and it's happening now. There comes a point when it's too much. And the killing and dismemberment is something. The politics, I don't think that changes, David.
I don't know, Alan, with two questions. I mean, one is, if it seems to me that one of the lines in the sand of the things that we all could have related to was the removal of children from their families and taking them away.
There's no bottom. 35% has no bottom. They will follow this man to the end of the earth. They will.
And if this and if this was a and this was a non-journalist and a white non-journalist, then maybe. But I don't know right. even in that case. But also the other question I have for you, Alan, is yes, there's the 35%. But what about the rest of the? What about the? What
oh,
about
sure,
the GOP? Well, what about
well,
the GOP? What about sure. what about Republicans? What about Republican lawmakers, especially as they go into the last days of the midterms?
Okay, so we know that the Republican lawmakers know about Trump's popularity with the 35% more than theirs, and then comes the profile and courage question, question, and that is. Who stands up and says, my stinking office is not worth my putting up with this? Does a John Faso, does a, you know, Elise Stefanik, do all of these people who are fairly marginal in terms of their popularity, do they get up off their hind legs and do what they need to do, which is to say this just ain't right? And if it means I lose a primary or I lose an election, okay, because we're Americans.
Yeah, I think that ship sailed. I don't think the GOP is – I mean, after Charlottesville, after some of the sexual assault allegations came out that, you know, when you're talking about a journalist in Saudi Arabia, I mean, I just think that's so far removed from the average person who supports Trump's daily life that it's just a non-issue. I don't want to be cynical about that, but, like – I really can't imagine them caring about this. Well, because they didn't care. I mean, Saudi Arabia, the report to Congress that came out on 9/11 showed that Saudi Arabia had funding for a lot of these terrorist attacks that came from the highest levels of government. Their airstrikes in Yemen, where they just simply dismissed that there were any civilian casualties. I mean, what Saudi Arabia has been doing is egregious, and this is one of the least egregious things they've been doing over the past 20 years.
The GOP of Machiavellian, and they do the good cop.
30 seconds. Go ahead.
They do the good cop, bad cop. So what you're going to find are those senators and electeds who are in districts that have moderate Republicans that are not necessarily Trump country, and they're the ones that are going to come out and be very vocal in taking the opposite position of Mr. Trump, a la Lindsey Graham, who decides to find his courage only when it's politically convenient.
Right.
So you're
right.
going to have characters like that come out and take a stand, but you're not going to have anyone in Trump country do that.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. No doubt have letters. Panel at WAMC.org. I can't summarize the entire conversation we had during the break. I just want to say that the phrase buffet of democracy was used.
Also a buffet of capitalism.
You know, and I feel when you can pull that out into a conversation, it deserves noting.
I was feeling pretty good until that music that just let us in.
Oh, so that's Ezekiel's Wheels Klezmer Band. There's too many S's in that name. But anyway, Ezekiel's Wheels Klezmer Band. And they're playing the Jupiter Lounge at Crossgates Mall on the 21st. That's Sunday. And all of that is to support the Nassau Synagogue and the Jewish Community Center. And we thank them. They're wonderful partners with us on a lot of stuff. And we thank them very much. NassauSynagogue.org for more information.
Very, very powerful.
Very much powerful. So. All right. We have letters. Let's go to those, and that'll help us continue to talk about this story. Eric writes to us and makes a good point. I was thinking about this, actually, and so I'm glad that this letter was written. Eric says, regarding Saudi Arabia, how many times has this happened in the past and they just got caught this time? That's a great question.
Yeah. Okay. I want to just say one thing about that.
Yes.
Because you guys keep making I'm sticking with my point that there comes a point at which the American people don't like what they're seeing. So you say, well, look, they've seen it all before. No, they haven't. They have not seen have been given specific evidence of a guy being killed, drawn and quartered, and carted out of that. That's something they can relate to. Economics, forget about it.
But I think you're right. Close. I mean, Alan, I think you're right. And I'm seeing a lot of pushback from moderate Republicans. Actually, you know what? I'm seeing a lot of pushback from Republicans, period. What I'm not seeing is an erosion, you know, in that base that is going to be sticking with him throughout this, you know, this this process. Unfortunately, that's just the truth.
Is that this process democracy for the next 2 years?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Just checking. Okay. So about the letter, though, how many times has this happened in the past, and they just got caught this time?
That's tough.
But what did they catch? What did they catch? Doing?
It's tough to know what else happened when it's such a repressive, closed regime to actually understand the scope of what's been happening. I mean, I'm not a Middle East expert. I wish Vera was here.
Well, if I'm understanding the question correctly, how many times have we seen successful assassinations go down in the world by different regimes? I think we're accustomed to that. I just don't think we've ever seen something as blatant as what we're witnessing now.
Exactly.
But I also think that this president, you know, has created a climate where folks feel emboldened.
Yeah.
You know, well, what is he going to do? We're in it too much with this guy.
Right.
We have his apartments. We've invested so much. You know, we got Jared. We love Jared.
Yeah.
You know, just Jared.
So to take a different spin on Alan's question is that, like, when is enough enough? Again, I think this is so far removed from most people in the United States. They look at it and they say, yeah, that's bad. And maybe that's the extent they'll think of it. But
no, because they can project, Aaron, because they can project themselves into that situation. That's what makes it different. I know I'm going on too long, but let me ask you this. Would Nixon have been out of that office had they not had those tapes and the specificity of those tapes? The answer to that is no. This is one of those rare moments when you can hear the guy screaming, when you can project yourself into that. This is a game changer.
So here's another possible way this could unfold is that evidence comes to light that this was, you know, tied to the highest levels of the Saudi government, and whether it's Republicans, you know, a handful of Republicans and some Democrats, that they push for sanctions on Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is the number two producer of oil in the world after the U.S. If Saudi Arabia really wants to go tit for tat, they could embargo oil to the U.S. and with their might in OPEC have a much larger embargo of oil, which could raise oil prices and gas prices. That's what's going to change the American public's opinion about this.
Well,
I don't think it's the abstract, well, this is a journalist, you know, this is a clear violation of the First Amendment. And I mean, I think when it hits people's pocketbook and you see that, you know, gas prices go up to $4 or $5 a gallon because of, you know, a Saudi embargo.
I couldn't agree with you more.
That would have an effect.
I could not agree with you more. And I think, Alan, the difference between Nixon and where we are right now is I think that in Congress, your Republicans were more of the John McCain strain of Republicans than they are today. As a matter of fact, I mean, I've been thinking about what would Senator McCain be doing in this moment, in this space, as we're witnessing what's happening.
Well, even people like Bob Dole, you know, I mean, yes, the moderate classic GOP, not this weird virulent strain.
Okay, but you're both right. We don't have one right now. Right now we have these, you know, cowardly
opportunists.
Yeah, that's right. And so stop talking to me about what was. Talk to me about what is. And that, by the way, is why I feel that I'm speaking for Alan here, not for a radio station or anything. I am saying that's why I feel that these elections, at least to the House of Representatives, are crucial. I've said it before. I'll say it again. You can love a guy, he can be a Republican, but he's going to vote for Speaker with the Republicans, and you have seen that they are absolutely adamant about not holding this president responsible. So flipping the House, to me, seems what it's all about.
Okay, so let me ask the follow-up question to what you just said, which is, how then do the Democrats over the next however many days, 20-some days, for want of a better term, capitalize on what is happening right now to score political points?
Well, I don't think they have to. In other words, I don't think they have to do that. I think it's good. It's being done by the press. It's being done before them. You know, you can say, how does my opponent feel about this? And if I'm a smart opponent, I say, well, I don't like it.
backfire too, though, because the most obvious channel to respond to this from Congress, whether it's Democrat or Republican, is imposing sanctions on Saudi Arabia in one form or another. They are our main ally, or at least with the Trump administration, our main ally in the Mideast, especially because of their stance on Iran, and we all know where Trump stands on that. But, you know, if Democrats want to push through sanctions and Saudi Arabia responds by saying, okay, well, we're going to embargo oil shipments to the U.S., that can really backfire for Democrats, because then everybody blames higher gas prices and higher heating costs going into the winter on Democrats who push through these sanctions.
There are no profiles in courage being done on Democrats. I'm sorry. Yeah. I woke up this morning, had a cup of coffee and some Haterade, but I will say that this party is just feckless. It is feckless. You know, campaign
on the Democrats. You're talking about the Democrats.
I'm
right
talking
now.
About the Democrats. And the idea that they could sit back, not say anything, not do anything because the press is doing it for them. Well, let's look at the press cycle. This story might be wiped off the front pages today with something else that happens that may not be favorable for purposes of of the midterm. So this idea that you're not in session right now working and proposing possible hearings on the issue, but also talking about sanctions, it's just absurd.
Well, you make a very good point, David, and I'll tell you why. Because we know that the Democrats' excuse is, well, we don't own the House, and therefore we don't have the ability to call election. We don't have the ability to call hearings and stuff. But they can, of course. They can have their own rump hearings anytime they want. It'll get all the press coverage. And I've said it before, I've always considered Chuck Schumer to be a friend. But where the hell is he in all of this stuff? Somebody should be leading the charge who is an authority. And Schumer just hasn't done that. It's not good. By the way, I wouldn't discount the Democrats taking the Senate also. This is going to be a very unpredictable election.
Indeed. Okay, I'm going to do one more letter, and then we're going to have to go. Actually, I'll finish up the letters, and then we'll go to a quick break here. Jim writes, can the panel explain to me why Saudi Arabia has never paid a price for providing, quote unquote, providing the majority of the 9/11 terrorists? This is the point you were making earlier, Aaron. I believe they also finance them as well on some level. We attacked the country that provided a safe haven for them, and bin Laden, also a Saudi, and no one has ever demanded a consequence. This is true of both Republican and Democratic administrations. Jim from Glomont.
Yeah,
because we have accepted the lie. And the lie is those were bad Saudis. Those weren't good Saudis. These were the bin Ladens. He was out of kilter with the worst family in Saudi Arabia in terms of the ruling class. And therefore, we let them off the hook and we let them go by plane at the last minute. Aaron, I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. But, you know, there's overwhelming evidence in the 9/11 report that Congress buried somewhere between pages like 430 and 450 about pretty conclusive evidence that funding for a lot of these terrorists going back to, well before the 9/11 attacks came from the highest levels of the Saudi government. And if that doesn't trigger a severe response to Saudi Arabia, the death of one journalist is not going to have any impact.
Aaron, that's why it was hidden between 436 and 438.
No, I mean, I totally understand that. But this is Congress's, I mean, this is what Congress people are supposed to do is read the report and say, okay, there's evidence to about this. We need to do something about it.
And real quick.
So let's attack Afghanistan.
Because we just also have this letter from Carolyn who says, so much for never forget 9/11. Apparently Trump has forgotten that 15 of the 19 hijackers came from Saudi Arabia. Right. Here's hoping transparent investigation isn't code for the superficial look-see that happened in the Kavanaugh debacle. Yeah,
my old contracts professor used to say, there are fewer things as dark and yet so full of subtle difficulties when we were discussing a complicated issue.
Or, wow, that's right. There was a buffet of democracy. Yeah. Go ahead.
You memorized that?
You know, the fact, you know, the Middle East.
It's embroidered on a pillow. The back of his car.
It's his neck tattoo, I think.
The Middle East and foreign policy with respect to the Middle East is a very complicated stew. And so the idea that the American government at that time, or even maybe now, that they're going to take some kind of act against what they consider to be a very vital ally in that region of the world, I just don't see that happening. And they didn't do it when 9/11 happened because you had the growing threat of Iran. You also had issues involved in Syria. And when you're talking about foreign policy, sometimes you just have to overlook some of the things that your allies are doing for the purposes of maintaining greater peace, and I believe that was what the philosophy was then. I don't know what that will be now.
Well, historically, whether or not politicians' memories go back this far, that when the U.S. supported Israel in the Yom Kippur War in 1973, the oil embargo led to inflation going from 4 or 5% to over 10% within the span of a couple months. There was gasoline rationing. It led to one of the most depressed economic decades in U.S. history outside of the Great Depression. There are consequences in terms of the economic role that oil plays in this. And repeating that can be very, very costly, and that is put on the politicians who put those sanctions in place. That's on their watch at this point. And I don't
Aaron, you believe that if we had an oil embargo, first of all, our position in the world is better than it used to be vis-a-vis oil. But if we had an oil embargo, one in one makes two, and the electorate would say, okay, these are the people we're going to hold responsible for this, or is it something more amorphous than that?
No, I think they would blame it on politicians of saying, well, you put these sanctions in place. These sanctions are causing higher oil and gas prices and heating costs. And oil is an input to everything. So it's not just gas and, heating fuel. It's
plastics.
Plastics, package delivery because, UPS and FedEx, the price of airline tickets. I think it would be very concrete. I don't think it would be amorphous at all.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have other topics to talk about. I'm sure we'll have more letters as well. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. We will be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. Alan Chartok, Aaron Pasitti, and David Soares making up the group this morning. We welcome your letters, panel@WAMC.org. We got a whole fistful of them here, so let's roll through them as quick as we can. Jed says, "Dear panel, who do you think will be the next journalist to be targeted by the Saudi royal family?" That's a grim thought.
Terrible thought. But it's, you know what, if you're a journalist right now in any part of the world, I mean, you are functioning right now. You are functioning in the most dangerous environment that you've ever had to function in before.
And that includes Russia. Let's not forget Russia's role in suppressing and poisoning people who are critical of the regime, whether they're journalists or, activists or whomever. So it's not just Saudi Arabia.
I have a friend who is a journalist in the Middle East right now. And not on Facebook, not on any of the other social media, keeping his head down because he knows how dangerous things are.
This is a dangerous spot to be in 2018.
Globally. Every space on planet Earth right now, where you're seeing governments that are being taken over by populists
and autocrats.
And autocrats, this is what is happening to reporters. It's just the idea that it could be touching us so close to home is something altogether different. And let me just clarify. I mean, you're going to have people that are reading the papers that have animus, that are going to do violent things. You know, like what happened in Washington or Virginia, the editorial room that was attacked most recently by a gunman.
Oh, in Virginia.
Virginia.
Yeah. It was the Annapolis paper. Yep. It was that in Maryland, right?
Yeah. So you're going to have those instances. But it's different than, you know, a leader from a country directing, you know, a hit on a specific journalist who is challenging this idea of freedom in Saudi Arabia. It's just...
Well, yeah, and let me just add one thing. We had one letter, a very good letter, from somebody who says, "Come on, Alan, you're so naive." Basically, you can watch these things that happen to Khashoggi anywhere on the internet right now. I don't agree with that. I think this has risen to the level of a very specific man who can be identified with and who we all know about. And yes, there are elements of the press and the rest of it, but in the end, we all think it would not be impossible to think we were sitting in that chair that Khashoggi was in.
So there was that letter. We also got this one that said, "Alan is right. There is a tipping point when Trump's base turns on him. It's when the economy goes bad, when people lose jobs, when inflation soars, when interest rates are raised every quarter of the year. It is when national debt sinks the economy and people have lost confidence in Wall Street. The tipping point is the economy." Alan?
I'm going to be betting Alan and that writer a cup of coffee, because that's coming. That's happening.
Sure. Well, if only we had an economist in the room.
I know. People vote with their pocketbooks a lot. I do agree. And you're starting to see the first cracks of that with the tariffs and some of the agricultural workers and farmers in the Great Plains states. So maybe that's the beginning of the backlash, but that's relatively concentrated. And, you know, what's... go ahead.
But take a look at what he's just done, which is this time to attack the Fed, right? And no president usually attacks the Fed, but he attacks the Fed. It's his Fed.
It's his Fed, right.
Yeah, you put the head guy in there. He has no shame whatsoever.
He also has no brain, because when Ben Bernanke was the chairman and Janet Yellen were chairman and chairwoman of the Fed, he was complaining that interest rates were too low. And now that Powell's talking about raising interest rates to, 3.25% by the end of 2019, now he's saying interest rates are too high. That is such a narrow band of interest rate changes in the history of the Fed.
You think it has anything to do with intellect? It's not intellect.
Well, that's how I prefaced that comment, that he's clearly not aware of this. But
well, no, I'm not even talking about that. He gets it. It doesn't matter. He gets in front of that crowd, and I could attach appellations to who those people are by going back to 1938, but I'm not going to do it right now. I actually did. And he throws them any piece of red meat. One day it's red, one day it's blue, one day it's pink. Yeah. It doesn't matter. They just applaud. They said, "This is our guy." We have no idea what he's talking about, but we think he's the right guy.
Yeah. I think that Trump's attack on the Fed was motivated by the downturn in U.S. stock markets, and he was just looking for a boogeyman to say, "Well, it's not me, so here's the scapegoat. Let's blame it on the Fed this time."
Absolutely. You understand. I mean, the average citizen does not understand that this man has access to information.
Exactly.
You know, way ahead of the press, way ahead of any reporting. So when you begin to see him lay the foundation for the creation of that boogeyman, you just know what's coming, so he never gets blamed.
An example of that, David, which is very good, is the fact that no matter how much he's going around the country trying to prop up congressional candidates, he knows what's coming. A blue wave is coming. So now, in the same way he's talking about the Fed, he's way out in front and saying, "Don't blame me if they lose, those losers."
Yeah, blame me if they win. Don't blame me if they lose. Right. That's what
heads I win, tails you lose.
Yeah. All right, let's go back to the letters, and this one from George, who says, sorry, guys, but the core Trump supporters are the same people who denied the reality of American children being murdered at Sandy Hook. They are going to not care about the death of an Arab in Turkey. Maria says, I know the discussion this morning has been about a journalist Khashoggi, but my question is, why has the story about Trump's taxes been squelched? It is as a headline for a day or two, and now nothing.
Well, that's true. I mean, the reality is that issues that involve a little bit of thinking are issues that are not going to, you know, stay in the headlines for any kind of duration. The shelf life on stories that actually require people to connect dots,
right?
You know, they're here today, gone tomorrow.
Right.
All right, let's go. Oh, Ray's ready to do news, so I guess we should.
Has he got a bad look on his face?
No, he's smiling, actually. He's smiling, and he's very happy.
Oh,
and
so
he's
a ray of sunshine.
He just jumped up and clicked his heels.
Yeah,
like,
he seems like he wants to jump in and come in and join us. It's
yeah,
we'd
love
nice.
That.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. All of this after news with Ray Graff. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Aaron Pacitti, and David Soares making up the group this morning. We have a lot of letters on this particular subject, so I'm going to go through these as fast as I can, and then we'll move on to some other stuff. Dave writes, there's simply no evidence to suggest Trump would lift a finger to assist an adversary. On the contrary, there's much evidence indicating that even if given the opportunity, he'd relish the chance to bury one. Given his animus toward the Washington Post coverage of him and the Post owner, Jeff Bezos, I'm afraid we must expect Trump to take advantage of the Khashoggi situation, relishing the opportunity to send a chilling message to journalists and their outlets critical of him. Expect little more than lip service, if even that, from him for protecting journalists and freedom of the press.
Well said.
We go to James, who says, enemy of the state, the murderer of the Saudi journalist doesn't faze Trump's base because he was a journalist and, by Trump's definition, an enemy of the state. Or of the people, as was the proper quote. Isn't this just a logical extension of his attack on the media? Alan?
Well, it certainly could be seen that way, Joe. It is an attack on the media. It all folds together. I think when people say he's stupid or he doesn't know anything or he's not an intellect, they forget one thing, and that is he's the president of the United States playing with these very tactics that got him there, preaching to the same crowd. I think it's despicable, but that's what got him there. And if he thinks, and by the way, we have seen polls about what people think about the press. They don't like it. They, you know, their Uncle Irving had his name misspelled in the paper. They painted him forever as a result of that. So, you know, they're very, very low in the they're very, very low in the polls, lower than Congress, I believe. So he knows what he's doing. He's going after them because he thinks it'll help him. That's the kind of man he is.
You know, you praise a congressman who body slams a reporter.
That's what you do.
Exactly.
And you're tone deaf because you don't even recognize that you're praising this man in the context of what's happening right now.
In the presser that he did the other day, you know, somebody asked him a perfectly legitimate question. He was sending the FBI in on the Khashoggi thing, and he won't answer. He won't answer. Finally, he turns around to the reporter and says, "What should I tell you?" Why should I tell you?
And that was a weird exchange all the way around. Mike writes, to answer Alan's question, where is the profile and courage among Republicans? There is no such animal with today's Republicans. They sold their soul to Donald Trump, and they are not going back. They're not going to buck him. Besides, I think they're afraid of him.
Yeah, I think the best metaphor for this, even though he was not elected, was Gary Cohn, who was the director of the National Economic Council, who, when Trump was talking about Charlottesville and saying, well, you know, both sides have a point. Cohn, who's Jewish, you could just see the anger in his face. Yeah. A lot of people thought he was going to resign. But, you know, he stayed around until that tax cut was passed and then he bolted. Huh. So, yeah, if you want to talk about not having a spine and putting much more self-interested motives above higher principles as being spineless, then, yeah, there's one right there.
Well, I think when you're talking about principles, when a man who is the leader of the free world shrugs his shoulders, equivocates, and then his primary response to the media is, well, they buy over $120 billion in military equipment. That's his response, but it also shows what his priorities are.
All right, let's go back to the letters. Chris writes, someone let Alan know that in the age of the internet, anyone can see things online that are horrific. Christians burning witches in Africa, ISIS beheading servicemen, etc. Which I know you know, Alan, but to the point of that if we want to see these atrocities, we can see these atrocities.
Well, you can if you want, but it is not predominantly leading every news cycle these days. It is not up there. People have given everybody else instructions, if you think about it. The instructions are, this is not acceptable. This is over the top. The writer is certainly correct that you could go on the internet and find anything true or false, but it takes a certain segment of the society to do this. This is universal now.
Maureen says, do you mean to tell me the American people are too stupid to see how Kushner financially benefits from his relationship with the Saudi prince? Shouldn't we question whether the U.S. government is complicit in this crime? This current administration may stay in power because Congress is not doing its job. Personally, our country is doomed.
I'd like to think that we are waking up from and recognizing the mistake that we made, and perhaps one of the silver linings here will be that we will never allow a person to occupy that position, the position of the President of the United States, without first looking at his income and tax records.
Yeah. So to the writer's point, I mean, I 100% agree with them. But, you know, tracing these international money trails is exceptionally complicated. And, you know, reading 30 or 40 page reports about, you know, how this money ended up in this account, and then that was wired to that account, and all of a sudden it's, you know, being dumped in the Saudi central bank or political coffers of the royal family. That's a very tangled web when you start looking at international money flows. So, yeah, there's evidence there that suggests this is absolutely the case. I'm guessing most people probably, especially amongst Trump's base, just don't buy it.
Yes, and can I just jump in there? I think you're right. And it's the profound thing that everybody has to understand about that 35%. There are a lot of people in there who say, yeah, I'd like to be doing that too.
Exactly.
I'd like to be a millionaire or a billionaire. And if you cut corners, the damn government is always getting in our way for doing that. And yes, how do I feel about women, this misogynistic stuff that everybody is claiming? Yeah, you know, if he gets a little this or that on the side, you know, that's something that we men like. Now, somebody's going to write a letter and say, Alan just endorsed misogyny. No, I'm just trying to explain where that 35% is, that they are with this president because they'd like to be like him.
Let's see. I'm going to go, I don't like that one. Hold on. Mark says, no, I'm sorry. Maureen says, if the administration has thrown its lot against Iran and Israel and Saudi Arabia, where does that leave Chuck Schumer in this debate about sanctions against the kingdom? Is he compromised? Alan.
Well, you know, I'm a Jewish American. I grew up, being raised in a household where Israel was a great sterling example of both socialism, believe it or not, in the beginning, and democracy. Things have changed substantially. I still love the state of Israel, been there, and would you think, based on the Holocaust and the rest, there'll be lots of letters on this, that they deserve their homeland. I also believe they've blown it. I believe that they have become, compromised and doing really bad things. That's what I believe. And as a result of that, I think Chuck Schumer is feeling the same way, to be honest with you. I think he has let his tremendous affinity for the state of Israel, one which I feel, be his leading way of having to negotiate on these very complicated issues. It's a tough one.
We go to another letter, this one from Jay, who says, good morning, panel. Instead of worrying about Saudi oil, why not contact leadership in Venezuela, offer financial aid and help with their internal problems? Their oil is plentiful and easier to access. Peace to a country in turmoil, and we're out of the Middle East.
By appealing to Venezuela?
That's not Trump's style.
Yeah, it's not Trump's style, but let's not forget, we're not in the Middle East just simply because of the oil, although that's one of the primary reasons why we're there. We're also in the Middle East so that an entire region of planet Earth isn't blowing up on Wednesday.
Your day may vary. Gordon writes, your discussions are wrong about the Saudi ability to affect our oil supplies. North American fracking and Canadian tar sands extraction, with all its environmental problems, have made the U.S. able to keep its energy prices under control. Yes, we still import, but on our terms, not OPEC's. And the Saudis no longer control OPEC as they did 40 years ago. The Democrats will never praise fracking for having won the U.S. this independence, but that is the fact.
Well,
Is that Gordon, the energy consultant?
Yes.
Oil is traded on a world market, so it's not like we just pick and choose which countries we want to import from. This oil is sold on a world market, so it's not just, the U.S., the U.S. is the number one oil producer in the world. I mean, I suppose we could just say, okay, we're going to stop importing oil and just use our own, but that's not how international energy markets work. It's not just Saudi Arabia, They have a big say in OPEC, and I'm sure they could get a lot of OPEC support to the extent that they do, cut supply to raise prices. So I disagree with that.
Okay, let's move on to some other topics, and I want to get to some other things before we have to time out here. Let's go to China and the stock concerns, and global stock markets show mixed results a day after a big drop on Wall Street. Concerns over China's economy continue to weigh on investors. Stock markets in Europe and Asia had mixed results on Friday, and major indexes in the U.S. recovered some of the ground lost the day before when a sharp decline on Wall Street extended what has been a rocky October for investors. Concerns over China's economy have dragged on stocks this month. China's currency hit a 21-month low amid the tariff fight between China and the United States, the world's largest economies. Perceptions in markets are evolving, and more people are nervous that this is going to be a long, drawn-out affair, according to Robin Brooks, chief economist at the Institute of International Finance, a trade group and research provider. This from the New York Times. Mm-hmm. Aaron.
Yeah, I think it will be a long, drawn-out affair as opposed to a sudden crash. Trying to explain movements in the stock market is very difficult. So taking a step back, if you look at the state of the U.S. economy right now, aside from a few bleak spots, it's performing pretty well. GDP growth is where it is. The unemployment rate's at a 40-year low. Inflation is totally under control. There's very little concern about the performance of the U.S. economy going forward that would suggest that U.S. equity markets should tank by as much as they did. Trump blamed it on the Fed, saying, the Fed's raising interest rates, and that's what's causing the market turmoil. The Federal Reserve has been very clear for almost a year in terms of what their interest rate policy is going to be, and that's going to be very slow, predictable, gradual increases in interest rates. The China story is certainly a part of it. Economic growth in China was down from 6.8 to 6.7 to 6.5% over the past 3 years. So sure, the Chinese economy is slowing. The value of their currency is dropping. The strength of the U.S. dollar is increasing, which is going to make the trade deficit between us and China even greater, independent of the tariffs. I think what's causing this, and this is just speculation as with all talk about the stock market, is that I think you're starting to see a reversal of the over-optimistic psychology that started when Trump took office of here we have a pro-business president. He's going to pass a big corporate tax cut that's going to boost corporate earnings. It's going to, growth is going to explode. 2 days ago, the Congressional Budget Office reported that the federal budget deficit was the largest it's been in 6 years.
Out of control.
Out of, well, out of control during an expansion. When the economy is doing good, you normally don't need giant tax cuts right. and massive ramp-ups in federal spending. So I think investors are concerned that, without getting into the details, when you have a rising federal budget deficit, when the economy is doing well, that pushes up interest rates. And when interest rates go up, investors move out of stocks into bonds. And that's exactly what you're seeing, because that's where the, you know, the higher asset returns are. So I think a lot of what Trump's doing and has done is starting to I think he shot himself in the foot by trying to do too much. And that could be inflationary and cause people to kind of scale back their investments in equity markets. The other important thing to point out about the stock market is that the richest 1% of the population owns half of all stocks. The richest 10% of the population owns 90% of all stocks. So when you're talking about a drop in stock prices, even when you include people's retirement funds, you're really talking about people earning mid-six figures and up.
I want to go. That's a brilliant exposition. That's why we're so lucky to have you with us, Aaron. But I want to go to the Chinese side. There's a little bit of a divide in their heads, obviously, in the leadership's heads. On the one hand, they say, oh, we're going to build islands, we're going to protect them, we're going to show our muscle. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, we have to be part of what's brought us all this way, and you're right on the money here, Aaron, is the relationship between us and the other world. So they have, on the one hand, this sort of militaristic thing and sometimes cheating thing, and on the other hand, they got to play ball. And Trump knows that, and Trump has said, okay, I got more muscle than you do, and I am going to punish you, and I'm going to make you into the boogeyman here. And the Chinese are in a tough spot, yes?
Yes, they are. But I don't think it's tough as a lot of people think, because China owns – it's common knowledge at this point about the amount of U.S. government debt that the Chinese hold. And they have some leverage. It's not just about the import and export side of the story about, well, we import more from China than they import from us. Therefore, our tariffs will be more damaging to their economy. I don't think either country wants a trade war. And I think investors are starting to see that, well, if it can happen with the world's largest trading partner in China, who's next? And what random feud is Trump going to pick to single out, I don't know, Brazil or some other country?
The truth of the matter is, in 2018, with the economies of the world being so inextricably intertwined, no one should be rooting for the decline or the demise of any economy, because it's going to, somewhere along the production line, it's going to impact on something that we as Americans consume.
Right. And, you know, interestingly, the so far, the effect that Trump's bluster on tariffs and threatening to just continue to ramp them up is actually really beneficial to China, because as Joe pointed out, that the Chinese yuan, their currency, is decreasing in value, which makes goods that the Chinese export to other countries cheaper. So if he wants to go this route, he's actually helping the Chinese stimulate their economy by other sources of foreign demand. China doesn't just export their goods to the U.S. There's lots of other countries that buy Chinese goods. So if the Chinese currency is going down, that's a huge external stimulus for the Chinese economy, independent of what Trump wants to think and what his intended plans for the tariffs are. So
Trump's already handed the Chinese a major win in opting out of TPP.
Yeah.
Right, and thrusting them into the position of power. And let's not forget that China is also working its way all throughout the world in what I would say is the most aggressive exercise of soft power that we've ever seen from the Middle Kingdom. And the reality is, along with that exercise of soft power will come other obligations. I think, you know, America's use of soft power historically throughout the world, ever since, you know, the implementation of the Marshall Plan, is that, you know, when you're investing in building other nations, you're also investing in their future. I think that the nearsighted folks who believe we should be building walls forget the fact that it was building these other nations that helped them to build strong economies that we have benefited from.
Right. And I mean, China's state-run growth policy for the past, 20, 30 years has been one of the most successful anti-poverty programs in the history of the world in terms of lifting peasant farmers to, maybe not middle class, but in terms of generating income. And Trump's playing a very short game that at some point when China becomes wealthy and moves from an export-oriented economy to a more consumption-driven economy that, their billion people are going to be a huge source of demand for U.S.-made products. And you have to be thinking in decades, not years. And that's what Trump's doing with the tariffs instead of seeing the larger picture.
And with that, I give you this great gift, the last word. Thank you very much, Aaron. We are out of time. My thanks to everybody. Alan, be well. Feel better. Aaron, good to see you.
Likewise.
Thank you very much. Good luck with all you've got going on there, sir. Be well, and hope we'll see you next week.
Yes, sir.
We'll see you next week. All right, excellent. Alan and I will be here on Monday. Have a great weekend. We'll be back after this.